plus, you're going to get a term like this. Plus other similar terms. Okay. Plus a lot of other terms. Plus the last term, which will look like sigma 1, q 1, sigma 1, q 2, sigma 1, q 3, sigma 1, minus q 1, minus q 2, minus q 3. That's it. Okay? So now, let's classify these terms. So the first term is the product of four sigma naughts. And it's got a U out in front. It's basically actually, there's nothing to integrate there because, you know, when you do the integral d sigma 1 of the first term, you just get zf and it cancels out. Okay, can you, everybody see that? In the first term, it is exactly minus u times the sum over the three q's of a product of four sigma naughts. Okay, so is everybody happy with that? And that is exactly a quartic term for the interactions amongst the sigma naughts. It's the bare interaction amongst the sigma naughts. So the first term contributes directly to the renormalized interaction. So there is, in the renormalized Hamiltonian, going to be a term that goes like u sigma naught to the fourth. Then there's terms like the second term that has a single sigma 1. And when you do the functional integral over sigma 1, that gives you exactly 0. And in fact, the same thing is true for the sigma 1 cubed term. Okay, because of minus, you're integrating them from minus infinity to plus infinity, so you just get 0. So terms with odd numbers of sigma 1s vanish. And what's left? Oh, well, there's actually that last term down there that has four sigma 1s. And we're integrating over sigma 1 with this weighting factor. And so basically, that gives you a constant. Which we can draw. And the reason, someone asked this in the last class, the reason why it can be dropped is because we're only trying to calculate the, derive the recursion relations for R and U. We're not trying to just calculate the whole partition function. If you wanted to calculate the whole free energy, you'd have to keep all your constants. So what's left? So basically, there are four terms. No, sorry, excuse me. There. There are, so this is what, 4 times 3 over 2 times 1 equals, there's six terms that involve 2 sigma naughts and 2 sigma 1s. And those are the ones we're interested in. And I leave it to you to check for yourselves that they're all exactly the same. And so they're all terms that look like this. There are 6 of them. Minus 6 times integral q1, q2, q3. Sigma naught Q1, sigma naught Q2, times the average of sigma 1 Q3, sigma 1 minus Q1 minus Q2 minus Q3. And again, the average means, as you can see up in that term, there's an integral over the sigma 1s with the weighting factor of the free Hamiltonian divided by that exact same thing without anything, you know, divided by that partition function. We're using that to average the product of 2 sigma 1s. So basically, this thing here, I'll just write down the answer. Is first of all, it's 0 unless unless this index is minus this index. Okay. Is everyone comfortable with that? It's just a Gaussian integral with two factors of the integration variable out in front. So it's like the this average of the product with respect to Gaussian weight. It brings down this factor here. Okay, this is just your classic Gaussian integral. And it has in it momentum conservation and so forth. And so, so this is equal to then minus 6u. So we only have one integral left, q1, sigma naught q1, sigma naught minus q1 times an integral. Now, this Q3 here is with the sigma 1, so it's only integrated between a half and 1 of 1 over Q3 squared plus R. So that's the answer. And just, you know, just to sort of make it clear what we're doing, let's collect all the terms that we've calculated from up to this so we've calculated everything up to here now. We We know that. We've calculated this. Let's collect it all together in terms of the effective Hamiltonian. And what you see is that H prime of sigma naught is equal to minus a half integral over Q Q squared plus R. This is from the free Hamiltonian. And then this thing here gives us a plus 12 because of the minus a half out in front. U integral 1 half less than 2, 3 less than 1, 1 over, actually I'm just calling this, well, let's call it Q3 squared plus R, doesn't matter what you call it. And this is all multiplying sigma naught Q, sigma naught minus Q. Okay, so that's the point that this term contributed to the quadratic piece of the effective Hamiltonian. Plus, we had one other piece which we wanted to keep, which was the first term up at the top there, which involves 4 sigma naughts. So then this is minus U integral Q1, Q2, Q3, sigma naught Q1, sigma naught Q2, sigma naught Q3, sigma naught minus Q1, minus Q2, minus Q3. So this is the effective Hamiltonian to first order in U. And one of the things that you can see is that it doesn't tell you anything about how U itself is renormalized. In other words, by just going to first order in U, we just get U in front of the quartic piece, and it's not renormalized at all. So what we're faced with at this point is that, well, we can write recursion relations. R goes to R prime is R plus something that depends on U. But U prime is just U. Well, I haven't really gone through all the, well, actually I have. Actually, we have to do, there's renormalization and there's stuff like that. But basically, yeah, it's not going to do anything. So the bottom line is that this does not capture so we have to keep going. Okay? We have to go and calculate the second term in the effective potential. Oh, let's do that over here. So let's do that. So this has terms in other words, if we want to think about how this would contribute to the effective Hamiltonian. This has terms of order 0, 2, 4, 6, and 8 in the sigma naughts. And that's partly because the odd terms all vanish because when you do the averages over the sigma ones. And we're interested in the ones with 2 and 4, if we just want to get the recursion relations for R and U. Now, you might wonder about the 6s and 8s and what they mean, but that actually is going beyond the accuracy of this calculation. Yes, Nicole?
So I see that we've been dealing with the U, and now you've written a U naught.
Sorry. Oh, no. What am I saying? Sigma naught. Sorry. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, that's right. So we want the quadratic and the quartic terms that come from the squared part of the interaction. And so we're going to analyze this in terms of diagrams, okay? And the diagrams will look something like this. Okay. So that's two powers of the interaction Hamiltonian. And basically, what we're going to do is we're going to focus on this case. Okay. So we're going to look at products of two powers of the interaction Hamiltonian. We're going to pick out the terms that have two U naught, two sigma naughts, and two sigma ones. Four sigma naughts and four sigma ones. Now, the sigma naughts, the four sigma naughts, means that this is going to be a contribution to this part of the Hamiltonian, the renormalized interaction. And the four sigma ones, they all get averaged over. So basically, by focusing in on this case, we're always going to be averaging over four sigma ones. And to do that average, we're going to use this trick, which I assume that you guys learned about in the cradle, which is Wick's theorem, which says that the product of any number of the average of the product of any number of these variables that are Gaussian, have a Gaussian distribution, can be written as a sum of all possible pairwise Gaussian averages of those, you know, averages of pairs of them. Okay, so if you like, if you have a product of four sigma ones, you want to do an average, you can express that in terms of products of averages of two sigma ones, two averages. And we're going to, it's going to be built into this little diagrammatic picture that I'm going to give you exactly what those pairs are. Okay. So at the moment, what we have is we have eight vertices, any one of which can be a sigma naught or a sigma one. And we're going to designate which are which, take the averages over the sigma ones, and look at what, and you know, use that average, which is then multiplying four sigma naught. So let's consider cases. Actually, let me do that.
this over here.
So let's look at this one here. Okay, what's the dash curve means? The dash curve means that, say, for this diagram, these are your sigma 1s. And we take these, we average these two, and we average these two together. And these are all sigma naughts. Okay, so that's one possible term in the average of this second order of this thing with four sigma naughts in it. Yeah.
To what extent, if to any extent, should we carry over what we've learned about diagrams in QFT?
Probably you should carry it over completely, but I don't know what you've learned in QFT. I don't know, Anna, what would you say?
I would say, can you repeat what those dashed lines are?
This is so we're looking at terms, we're looking at pieces of H squared, which have, that's what we're looking at. And we're restricting ourselves to the case where four of these things correspond to sigma naught. So four of them, and four of them are sigma 1s. Okay, we're going to average over the sigma 1s, and the sigma naughts just come along for the ride because they'll enter into the Hamiltonian.
And dashed lines.
This means that they're, I'll write one out in a second, but basically if this is sigma 1 of Q1 and this is sigma 1 of Q2, then this dashed line means that there's an average of sigma 1 of Q1 times sigma 1 of Q2, which gives you that propagator, that 1 over. Okay. But that's, we're not going to get that far with this diagram, as you can imagine.
So the notation is a bit different in terms of diagrams. The notation is different, but the calculation
is different. Hopefully it's transparent, though. It will be transparent when we actually calculate one. Right now we're not going to calculate one because I'm immediately going to say, yes, but this one is a disconnected diagram. So then, because of the form of the cumulon, it's not going to give us any contribution. It's just zero. So diagrams of that type, where you average over one of them and the other one can be anything, any place, or in this case, in Q space, any place. Diagrams like that just don't enter in the cumulon, okay? Because they cancel out exactly. Okay. So that's, forget about those diagrams. Now we can have diagrams like this, where those are some sigma ones, and those are sigma ones. And these guys, actually, we can calculate, but they're zero. Okay, so let's calculate those just so we can get more into what we mean by these diagrams. Okay, so these are zero. Okay, so let's write out this diagram now. That's the first one I'll be writing out for you. So this guy here is going to be integral Q1, integral Q2, integral Q3, integral Q5, integral Q6, integral Q7. This guy here is going to give us a sigma naught Q1. So that's from this corner here, which we'll call 1. Actually, I'll label the corners. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
You meant to skip Q4?
Oh, it's minus, Q4 is going to be minus Q1, minus Q2, minus Q3 because of, that's already true in the bare Hamilton, in HI. The form of HI is integral over, didn't I have that here? Well, you can see the average of HI. So the thing that has the triple integral over Q1, Q2, Q3 there, that is, as you can see, with the minus U, that's HI. So yeah, it's on purpose. Okay, so what do we got here? We've got average of sigma Q2. Sigma 1 Q2, sigma 1 Q3. That's that. And then down here, we have the average sigma 1. And Q4, as I said, is minus Q1, minus Q2, minus Q3. And then we've got sigma 1, Q5. And then all the other vertices that don't have any lines coming out of them are sigma naughts. So this is all multiplying sigma naught Q6, sigma naught Q7, sigma, that's a 7, sigma naught Q8. Okay, so there's two things. I mean, one of the purposes of this is to show you what the diagram actually represents. And now I will also show you that why this is zero. Okay, so here, this average means that Q2 plus Q3 has to be zero. Okay. And this average here, says that, if you like, you can write Q5 is equal to Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3. But we already said that Q2 plus Q3 is zero. So this is equal to Q1.
Why is Q2 plus Q3 zero, and what are you saying that implies?
This average is zero unless these two guys add to zero. This is like momentum conservation, or if you like, the fact that this is the average of the absolute value squared of sigma Q2 if sigma Q3 is minus sigma Q2. Okay, you have to go back and look at the definition of this and what the Gaussian integral does. But the point is that the Gaussian integral, where you average over all the sigmas, you only get non-zero averages of pairs of sigmas if they're the same sigma. In this case, this is the complex conjugate of this when Q3 is minus Q2. Okay, so that's the only place where you get non-zero averages. Okay, so now the point is that this is a term that has a sigma naught Q1, which means that Q1 has to be less than a half. And it also has a sigma 1 Q5. And Q5, which means that Q5 has to be greater than a half, which means that Q1 cannot equal Q5. And so therefore, this term is zero. Okay. So because of this, Okay? So that term is exactly zero. Okay, so what does that leave us with? That leaves us with terms like this. Yeah.
Sorry, could you explain again why sigma 0, q1, sigma 1, q5, 0?
If q1 equals q5?
Yeah.
Because sigma 1 is defined, remember the definition of the sigma naught. We defined this. Sigma q is equal to sigma naught q plus sigma 1q, where sigma naught q equals sigma q for q less than a half and equals 0 for q greater than a half. And sigma 1 was exactly the opposite. Okay, so they're like defined as like step functions. One is sigma 1 for less, and the other one is rows up at half. So the product of a sigma naught and a sigma 1 for the same 2 is exactly 0. All this implies that sigma naught q sigma 1 q is identically 0. Okay. So we're set. So now what we want to do is calculate these diagrams. And there are many of them. There's 72 of these. There are 6 squared ways of picking out 2 here and 2 here, and then there's 2 ways of connecting them together. So you can figure that out for yourself. But basically, there's 72. And so what I would say is that we're looking at the piece of the average of hi squared, which has 4 sigma naughts. In other words, four lines coming out of that diagram that don't involve any averages. And that's what I mean by this now. I mean, there's other contributions to this, which we're not writing down. Well, so this. U squared, 72 over 2 because of the half. Now what have we got here? We've got integral q1, q2, q3, q5, q6, q7. I hope I didn't do that wrong. No, actually, that's right. I'm integrating over everything. Sigma naught of Q1, sigma naught Q2. Yes, that's right. Average sigma 1 Q3, sigma 1 Q5, average sigma 1 minus Q1 minus Q2 minus Q3, and sigma 1 Q6. And then this multiplies sigma naught Q7 and sigma naught minus Q5 minus Q6 minus Q7. Okay, so that's that diagram, one of those diagrams. And then there's 72 of them. So this one gives us Q5 is minus Q3, and this one gives us Q6 is Q1 plus Q2 plus Q3, and that's it. And so the answer is sigma naught Q1, sigma naught Q2, sigma naught Q7, sigma naught presumably minus Q1 minus Q2. Times, so what do we got here? This thing here gives us, so we're going to get rid of Q5 and just keep Q3. Q3 is large. 1 over Q3 squared plus R. And then this guy here, also has a Q3 in it, but it has a Q1 and Q2, so this is times 1 over Q1 squared plus Q2 squared plus Q3 squared plus R. So note that Q1, Q2, and Q7 are small. And Q3 is large. As you can see from which sigmas they go along with. Okay. So, so now we're set. So we write out our effective Hamiltonian again. It's minus a half integral Q. Less than a half Q squared plus R plus, we have that 12U integral 1 over Q prime squared plus R Q prime greater than a half sigma q, sigma minus q. Now, there should be a u squared term in here too, which we haven't calculated, because we haven't calculated all the diagrams where we pair up six of those and only two. And actually, in order to get recursion relations which are correct in lowest order, we don't actually need that term. That would give a higher order correction to R, so take my word for it. We don't need to do it. What else have we got here? We've got minus integral Q1, integral Q2, integral Q3, U minus 36 U squared times this one integral. Which has this 1 over q prime squared plus r, and has this other factor, 1 over q1, what do I want to call this? Q1 plus q2 plus q prime squared plus r. Times sigma naught q1, sigma naught q2, sigma naught q3, sigma naught minus q1, minus q2, minus q3. Okay. So that's it. That's our effective Hamiltonian so we haven't done the whole renormalization group step. We've just done the first part of the renormalization group, which is to integrate over the short wavelength cubes, the large cubes. Okay, so now we need to go on and do the rest of the RG procedure. So RG procedure is
John?
Yeah.
Maybe this is a good time for me to say whether these are the same as in QFT or not.
Go ahead.
The diagrams, yes. Yeah. So they are the same. The only difference is that here those axes, this thing just denotes a vertex, right?
That's the the quarter
vertex. A point where
four lines are coming.
Four lines interact, four particles
right.
interact.
Right.
Whatever you want to. However you want to think about it. And the only propagators we have here are the dashed lines.
Right, right.
Because here we are only interested in internal propagators. So
exactly.
Here the non-dashed lines, they are not propagators. They are just legs of a vertex.
Right.
And the important thing is that in all those diagrams, we have four such legs that are free. And this is why this shows an effective interaction of
four out of eight.
Sorry?
You mean four out of eight?
Yeah, four are free.
Yeah, exactly.
In the second diagram, for example, 1, 6, 7, and 8 are free.
Right.
And you can see from the diagram that this doesn't conserve momentum, because if you look at this as an incoming particle from one, from vertex one, in order to go to 6, 7, and 8, it goes through 4, 5, which is the higher momentum particle. So momentum conservation fails precisely there.
Right, that's exactly right, because
right.
Q1 and Q5 cannot be equal, because as you say, Q5 is high momentum and Q1 is low momentum. Yeah.
So these are exactly the same as what you have seen in
Yes.
There was like a change in that propagator, like from we got hit out, there we had like Q1 squared, Q2 squared, Q3 squared, and so we had Q plus Q.
That's wrong. Sorry. Yeah. That's just wrong. Let's see if I can get it back. And did I do it right in the last one? Yeah, it's right at the top. Sorry about that. Okay, so since everyone's on board now. So we're going to do the renormalization group procedure, and the renormalization group procedure is we're going to define a Q prime or Q tilde, which is 2Q, and we're going to define sigma of Q tilde is some renormalized, it gets renormalized in this way. So I'm just doing everything at the same time now. So we define new Qs, which are twice the Qs here. We then absorb a factor into, we take a factor which allows us to define a new spin degree of freedom. And we're going to, we'll just do that then. So H prime is then equal to minus a half times C squared, zeta squared, 2 to the minus D. This is for the first term, which has two sigmas. Integral 0 less than Q tilde less than 1 now. Q tilde squared over 4. Plus r plus 12u times this integral to which we do nothing. Okay, so that's the quadratic piece in terms of the new variables, where we've written everything in terms of Q tildes and Q tildes here. Now, I don't call them sigma naughts anymore. I just call them sigma tildes, and their momentum variable can be anything between 0 and 1. Now I can do that now. Why? So first thing I did was I defined my Q this way. I defined my Q tilde this way in terms of Q. Okay, and then I label my sigma naughts with this rather than with this. But there's now they can go from 0 to 1. Because the momentum that they actually had was Q tilde over 2. So it's we don't need to distinguish between sigma 1. We've gotten rid of all sigma 1. We've integrated them out completely. OK, so now what's new here is we've got here we've got four powers. So we've got minus zeta to the fourth. And we've got three Q integrals here. So that gives us a factor of 2 minus 3d instead of 2 to the minus d. Okay. And then we've got q1 tilde, q2 tilde, q3 tilde, u minus 36 u squared. Integral q prime, which is just the old q prime. So now what did we have here? We had q1 plus q2, but those become q1 prime over 2 plus q2 prime over 2 plus q, call q prime here, squared plus r. Okay. Times am I mixing up tildes? And, no, this is, these are tildes. So. Sigma 1, Q1 tilde prime, Q2 tilde prime, sigma Q3 prime, sigma prime minus Q1 tilde. So now, we do the same trick. We're going to define by zeta squared times 2 to the minus d times a quarter equals 1. So that's this, this, and this. So that the coefficient of q tilde squared is going to be 1. And that gives us that zeta is 2 to the 1 plus d over 2. And then we substitute that into the coefficient of this term. And then zeta to the fourth, 2 to the minus 3d is equal to 2 to the, 4 minus d. Okay, so this pulls off minus 3, 4 minus 3, 3 to the 4th. I see. Okay, that's right. Yeah. So we get a 4 from zeta to the 4th, and we get a 4th is 2d minus 3d is minus d. Yeah, okay, you can do the arithmetic. Mm-hmm. Like that.
I'm not
yeah.
sure where the 1 fourth comes from.
That comes from here. We did all these integrals, and we ended up with this q squared thing having a 1 quarter, and now we want to get rid of that. And so we want this thing to be 1. This is exactly what we did for the Gaussian model. And we call this 2 to the epsilon. And now, okay, so this is the epsilon. This is the small parameter in our problem that gives the name to the method of the epsilon expansion. And you can see that it comes out that U is basically, well, we'll see in a second. U is basically being renormalized by 2 to the epsilon. So at this point, we would like to write down the recursion relations, but we've got this expression that involves these messy integrals, which are just some function of little r. And what Wilson did and what Wilson and Kogut do is that they argue that it shouldn't matter if you write this integral just going to represent it that way. So the point is to try to capture the R dependence. And we're not specifying what the constant is. The 4 is put in for convenience. And they're saying, roughly speaking, this varies like 1 over some constant plus R. Or 1 plus R. And then they do even worse things to this. They write that as C over 4 times 1 plus R squared. Now, if any, so you could say, okay, yeah, go ahead.
Well, that should also be R plus R for the second squared.
R, right, sorry. This one here. So you might say, gee, that looks like a really sloppy approximation. So then you should keep your eye on it as we go on to see whether it actually affects any result that we get, that we care about. Okay. So, I mean, I think it's, you can be skeptical about that. But having said that, where are we? We actually have our recursion relations now. And so that's our recursion relations. And so from this point on, we want to analyze these. And you notice right away that there are two fixed points. Two fixed points. We've got the Gaussian fixed point. J which now, well, as before, but corresponds to R and U being zero, because if R and U are zero, everything has at least one factor of R or U, and so that's a fixed point. But now, we also have another fixed point, which is called the non-trivial fixed point. And that one we actually have to calculate. So, like in this first expression, R star is going to equal 4R plus 12 C U star over 1 plus R star. Okay, so this is a fixed point equation that says when this is a fixed point, it just gives you back R star. And then similarly, now here, we're going to assume now, I mean, this is the point where U, which is a fixed point with U not equal to zero. That's why it's non-trivial. Okay, so U star is not zero for this case, so we can divide through by it. And so on the left-hand side, we have 1 is 2 to the epsilon times 1 minus 9C U star over 1 plus R star squared. Okay, so this is our non-trivial fixed point equation. We just need to solve those for R star and U star. And
in the equation for R star, how did we get a plus 12?
Sorry, I'm lost too.
It's just equation for R sub L plus 1.
Oh, that. No, sorry. I see. Yeah, that's a plus. Yeah, thanks. It's a plus over there. Yeah, we got a plus 12 U. Okay, so now let's solve these. Let's look at this. I don't know what the best way is to do this. This is the way I did it. So this says 2 to the epsilon minus 1 is equal to 9c times 2 to the epsilon u star over 'Kay, so now we're going to start thinking of epsilon as a small parameter, as an expansion parameter, if you like. And so we're going to write this as epsilon log 2. We're going to write this as 1. So basically what we've got here is I haven't written this in my notes, but it's like 9c over 1 plus r star is equal to say 9c over 1 plus r star is equal to epsilon times 1 plus r log 2. Anyway, I'm just going to substitute this into the first expression for r star. So r star is equal to plus.
There must be a u star also there. In
here?
Yeah, 9c u star.
Yeah, u star. It's 12, so 4/3 times this. Yeah, looks right. Okay. So 3r star, bringing this over here and that over there, is minus 4/3 epsilon log 2 times 1 plus r star. So basically what this tells you is that r star is of order epsilon. It's actually minus 4/9 epsilon log 2. And you can forget about this r star because it's of order epsilon. So that's the answer there. Yeah?
Can you repeat where you have 9c u star over 1 plus r star?
Yeah, so I multiply, I took this,
right,
this.
Just above that?
Multiply through there to get this.
Right.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I started from here, multiplied through by one factor of 1 plus r star. That left me with 9c u star over 1 plus r star. And on the left-hand side, I have epsilon log 2 times the 1 plus r star that I multiplied through by. This is just my crazy way of doing algebra. You can do it yourself. Yeah.
So why is epsilon small?
Why is epsilon small? So, yeah, so Michael Fisher once wrote a paper that I've been meaning to look up, which was something like statistical mechanics in 3.99 dimensions. Epsilon isn't small for 3 dimensions, and even less so for 2. It's 0 in 4 dimensions. And so the question is can you figure out what happens when you move away from 4 dimensions by reducing the dimension from 4 down towards 3? So that's the basically one of the ideas in this method. So it doesn't have to be small. But if it is, then you can do all this and get out the leading term in epsilon. Let me see where I want to stop here. I'd actually like to, you. So, I want to get u out of this. Epsilon log 2. Oh, I see. Yeah. Epsilon log 2 over 9c.
Explain again why we dropped the term, the r, the extra r star. I meant to, because it was order epsilon, but so is log 2.
No, no, log 2.
I'm confused.
Epsilon, think of epsilon as 10 minus third.
Okay.
Log 2 is 0.693. But it, I mean, they.
But R star is small.
R star is small. R star is small. Okay, and it's negative actually. That's also important. So if you then, so R star is epsilon times one plus R star. So that would be an epsilon squared correction.
Oh, I see. I see.
Okay, so this is our new fixed point. Correct order epsilon. And I wonder whether that isn't a good place to stop, because what we're going to do next is spend a lot of time talking about what happens both at this fixed point here and this fixed point here, and around those fixed points, what the flows look like. Yes?
I just want to try to understand what does this mean. We get a small integral, and we got a small in which R star should be a negative number.
It's negative, yeah, exactly. So what does that mean?
R should be the...
R is T minus TC. It can be positive or negative.
Oh, yeah.
So what this says is that when you turn on, for this problem, which is governed by this fixed point, the transition, or the fixed point, or if the, actually it'll turn into the transition temperature, is lowered by adding this non-zero U term. Okay? In Gaussian level, the TC was zero, was R equals zero. Now we put on this quartic term, and the transition temperature, I mean, this isn't the transition temperature, this is the fixed point, but remember, the transition temperature is where you cross the critical surface that flows. We haven't said whether these things are relevant or irrelevant, whether these the exponents that go with these things are larger or smaller than one. We haven't calculated any exponents yet, so you don't know what the flow diagram looks like, but I'm telling you that the fact that this is negative means that as you turn on the U, the transition temperature actually gets reduced.
But there's also epsilon there.
It by a small amount. And in D equals 4, it isn't. Everything's at D equals 4, as you can see, this point coincides with the Gaussian.
But you cannot do something 3.999.
Oh, tell that to Michael Fisher.
I mean, for a physical system, there's nothing. For that, there's nothing 3.999 dimensions.
Right.
And
right.
You cannot flow from this to a three-dimensional because the epsilon goes big.
Right, right. So you probably need to calculate this to like higher order in epsilon. If the series converges, then your things are okay. And I'll tell you about that also. It doesn't converge, but anyway. It allows you to get an answer. It allows you to get a correct answer. Okay. So anyway, let's reserve your skepticism for a short time until tomorrow.